Log Talk Radio.
Howdy, everybody. Man, I'm jam-packed. Okay, all right. Yeah, I was up super late last night clipping out the debate for you. Whatever is what it is. I got some good material, though. That's what counts. I'm the only person on the planet who sat through the torture of watching that debate and then followed it up with immediately sitting through it again and feeling the pain the entire time. It was bad. Man, it was bad. Okay, so I'm going to obviously break it down for you, tell you who I think won, why that is. Then we'll get into what might be the worst moderator job I've ever seen. I mean, it was just out of this fucking world. Then, naturally, I have the specific clips of the specific back and forths that should concern everybody, should make you think. So we'll talk about that. And later on in the show, if we have time, we will get into Bill Clinton went after Obamacare. What? And Gary Johnson is continuing to shove his foot in his mouth, according to some. So we'll talk about all that stuff and more. All right, let's get started here. First, let me tell you what happened in the debate, who I think won. So last night, we had the VP debate, as some people on Twitter were pointing out. They called it the Thrilla in Vanilla because we basically had the human equivalent of prune juice versus the human equivalent of oat bran. Just the most boring people. Nobody in the country knew who the fuck they were, by the way. I'm more famous than Tim Kaine and Mike Pence combined before yesterday. Now maybe not so much. But, I mean, it was bad. Like, I was expecting it to be boring. It was worse than that. It wasn't boring. It was, you know, I'm sitting there contemplating suicide through half the time. So, overall, who won? Well, we only have at this point one scientific poll, CNN ORC. It was a snap poll directly after. And they found that 48% said Mike Pence won, while 42% said Tim Kaine won. And just to put it in perspective, again, for those of you who don't know, Mike Pence is Donald Trump's VP. Tim Kaine is Hillary Clinton's VP. So people are saying that Mike Pence's VP won. Now, when you go to the polls online, which admittedly are not scientific, they, I think, have Mike Pence winning by much wider margins. So the consensus appears to be that Mike Pence took the debate. Now, what's my take on it? There's two very important points to make. Number one is, if you were to grade it just on substance, so in other words, if you were to have the transcript of the entire debate and you have fact checkers sit there and go through it all, it wouldn't even be close. On paper, Tim Kaine owned Mike Pence's punk ass. You know, he repeatedly hammered Donald Trump and pointed out that Pence couldn't defend Trump and that Trump said all these crazy things. So on paper, it wasn't even close. It was Tim Kaine by a mile. But I have to admit as well, watching it, I also got the sense that Mike Pence won. Because Tim Kaine is really, really annoying and unlikable. Like, he really comes across as a whiny bitch. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, he was aggressive and he was right in the shit he was saying. But I think the overriding point in terms of the perception of the American people and average people watching the debate who don't know anything about either of these guys is that guy is fucking annoying. He's annoying. He just is. He just rubs me the wrong way. He rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, which is why it showed that after the debate, even though if you fact check it, Tim Kaine was right about nearly everything he said, people went, no, I think Mike Pence won. Mike Pence, he used to be a talk show host. He used to be a radio talk show host. You could tell last night. Because, I mean, not to toot my own horn, even though that's what I'm going to do. There's something about people who talk for a living, or talked for a living, in the case of Mike Pence, where your rhythm, your cadence, your timing, it becomes well-honed, your inflection. You know when to interject. You know when not to interject. But Tim Kaine, oh, man, that just wasn't there, man. It just wasn't there at all. According to one count, he interrupted Mike Pence over 70 times. I'm not flat-out anti-interruption. I think sometimes an interruption is necessary. And when you do it and if you do it, you have to be assertive and direct and get right to the point and explain why it basically was necessary for you to interrupt to really correct the record in a must-do way. But with Tim Kaine, it was just like – it was kind of like those half interruptions where he knows he shouldn't be interrupting and he knows he's cutting into Mike Pence's time, but he'll interrupt. And he'll do it in an annoying way where, like, he tries to make his point fast and then, like, trail off and look at the moderator for approval and look at the audience for approval. It just – it wasn't good, man. He just came across like Brady Bunch boy on coke. That's what I see when I see Tim Kaine. Mike Pence is, I mean, at the end of the day, a smug, smarmy, fake politician as well, maybe even faker than Tim Kaine. But he was able to keep it together in a way where he just rubbed people the wrong way less. That's the most you could say about this debate, is one person was less annoying than the other person. And also, I have to say, Mike Pence is a fantastic liar. Because there were times in the debate where Tim Kaine would say something like, well, Donald Trump said X, Y, and Z, whatever it might be. And they were outlandish things that Donald Trump actually said. And then Mike Pence would be like, oh, come on. Come on, Senator. I must admit, that's below both you and Hillary Clinton, and that's pretty low to say. And if you're somebody who's watching this who doesn't know all the finer points and the ins and outs and the details of the campaign, you'd go, oh, Mike Pence is right. Because the way he made the comment is like the mature adult way to correct something, even though he's just lying. So it was really weird to see. I've never seen a bigger disparity in my life of somebody being right on the facts, somebody being correct about what they're saying, and policy-wise too, and then the other person being dead wrong on virtually everything, but just clearly coming across like they won the debate because they're just a better presenter. Well, that's what I experienced here. So we'll have more scientific polls on this a little later. It appears like it was a Mike Pence victory in a slight edge. They say that according to the focus groups, only people who already like Hillary Clinton said that Tim Kaine did well. So everybody else was like, eh, kind of annoying, kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And look, that is a shame when you think about it, because it does show you that style over substance is really a thing. It's almost like if you have a bad product with a good salesman, there's no denying more people are going to buy that bad product because the good salesman made you think it was a great product. Now, on the flip side, you could have the best product in the world, but a shitty salesman, and you're not going to get as many sales. That's just the nature of reality. And by the way, not saying Hillary Clinton is a great product or the best product ever, but what I am saying is Trump is a disastrous product. Mike Pence is a disastrous product, but he was able to sell that package better. And, the wool can be pulled over the American people's eyes pretty quickly, as we've seen and pretty effectively, as we've seen with the election of Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, you know, the re-election of George W. Bush, and much more. So a little frustrating to watch. I had to watch it twice, so I'm still contemplating suicide this morning. But it is what it is. It appears like there was a slight victory for Mike Pence. All right, now, again, we're just getting warmed up here with the debate and the breakdown, so we move on to the questions. The VP debate questions last night were some of the worst ever. There were questions on Social Security running out of money, questions on the national debt, a question on personal faith, Here's one of my favorites. A question about North Korea launching a preemptive nuke, and the majority of the debate was on Syria and Putin. Actually, that's not fair. It's not the majority. It was the plurality. So of all the different issues, most time was spent on Syria and Vladimir Putin. And there was absolutely nothing, nothing on climate change or poverty, healthcare, trade deals. No questions on that. None. So, I mean, stop and think about that. This moderator decided, more sense, to ask the question, how would you react if North Korea launched a preemptive nuke against the United States? It was more important to ask about that than poverty and the fact that, I don't know, we literally have hundreds of thousands of homeless people in the country. Over 70% of the American people are living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, the levels of income inequality are preposterous. Yeah, around the world, too, not just the U.S. We're talking about 62 people with more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion. That's 50% of the population of the planet. They have less than the top 62. Okay, none of that. How would you react if North Korea launched a preemptive nuke against the U.S.? Here's what's not happening, that. That's not happening. And the fucking climate change is happening right now. We're seeing the effects. We know how disastrous it's going to be. Scientists are screaming at us about it. We've had two debates so far, not a single question about climate change. We're having an increase in natural disasters and the strength of the natural disasters. The sea levels are rising. New Orleans is going bye-bye. You got all these problems. You're going to have wars over water. You're going to have the Middle East be uninhabitable soon. I mean, you want to talk about a refugee crisis, Syria is nothing now. Wait until the entire Middle East has to empty because the temperatures are too hot for human survival on a regular basis. And they're up there asking questions about a preemptive strike from Kim Jong-un. I can't, man. It's unbelievable. And so the framing of the other questions, you know, some of you might hear me say, well, they ask questions about Social Security and whether or not it's insolvent. And you might think, well, that seems like a legitimate question. No, they framed all the questions from a bullshit right-wing perspective that we know is false. So they're talking about, oh, Social Security goes bankrupt. It goes bankrupt very soon. It goes bankrupt. Okay, no, first of all, no, it doesn't. Why are you just taking right-wing talking points? If you do your research, you find out that all this stuff is fear-mongering. So I believe it's fully solvent until the year 2037, and then after the year 2037, it pays out 75% of its benefits or thereabout. So in other words, all you need to do is minor tweaks to keep it solvent as far as the eye can see. But they frame it like, you know, it's going to go bankrupt very soon, and when it goes bankrupt, it's like all the money's gone and nobody, they can't pay out anything. Well, that's just not true. Social Security has a surplus as we speak right now. Was that brought up? That wasn't brought up. The national debt, I mean, you would think you put some facts in there along with it, like, okay, yeah, the national debt is one thing. That's the cumulative amount of money that we're in debt, you know, going back to the founding of the country. But, hey, perspective here. The Obama administration has cut the deficit, the annual deficit, massively. So they inherited a $1.4 trillion deficit. Right now it's about $500 billion. You know, if you want to frame it from that perspective and ask what are you going to do for deficit reduction, that's one thing. But when you fearmonger about the national debt and your focus is on that over something like poverty, when virtually all economists say, hey, look, if you want to affect poverty and you want to do stimulus, you're going to have to go more into debt. This is Keynesianism 101. I mean, every single thing was framed from a right-wing perspective. And the questions, some of them were just trivial, unimportant questions. Talk to me about your personal faith and how that's affected your governing decisions. Okay, that shouldn't be a thing because we live in a secular country. So when you ask about personal faith and how that affects your decisions, that's like saying, tell me about how you've contemplated violating the Constitution of the United States of America. That's not a question. Now, look, I get it on the one hand because Mike Pence is sitting there. Mike Pence was most known for his vicious anti-gay bill in Indiana where he wanted to make it legal for businesses to just, you know, discriminate against whoever for religious reasons. So for religious reasons, you hate black people, get out. It's my religion. Well, according to Mike Pence, that's totally cool. Hey, I don't serve gay people. Get the fuck out of my establishment. Well, it's totally cool to Mike Pence. So on the one hand, I get it because he's on stage. But on the other hand, why does everything have to be framed from a right-wing perspective? And why do you have to make it like you're fucking coddling their faith, their belief in mythical beings? This is a VP debate, son. We're talking about over 300 million people in the United States of America affected by their tickets decisions. And that's what you're asking about? I'm going to say it again. This is why people are flocking to new media. Okay, Secular Talk, one channel in a fucking ocean of channels on YouTube with $0 in our advertising budget, we beat CNN ratings in the middle of the day in the key demographic. Think about that. So they put robot boy Wolf Blitzer up there. They got, it's a billion-dollar corporation. They got massive amounts in advertising. It's one channel of however many few channels there are on TV, so it's a much higher likelihood people will tune into it. And in the key demographic, which is the money demographic, the one that advertisers like, we beat Wolf Blitzer. We beat CNN in the middle of the day. That's not because I'm so great. That's because they're so shitty. And this is what you get. This is the kind of, moderating you get at the VP debate. And for a while, I thought Siri was hosting the debate. It sounded like Siri. I don't know how many of you watched the debate, but she was a robot humanoid. Everything was like even faker than the politicians. I'm like, how is this happening? It was beyond ridiculous. Look, for whoever's hosting the next debates, well, one of them is Chris Wallace. So, and he already said, I'm not going to fact check. Oh, God, kill me. But whoever's hosting the other one, I think it's Anderson Cooper. Again, he's not going to do it, but Anderson, I beg you, I plead with you. Ask real questions. Be tough on them. Yes, fact check. But I know that's not going to happen. You want to know why? They wouldn't have picked these guys to be the moderators if that were to happen. It'd be somebody else. Okay. Next. So as everybody knows, we had the VP debate last night, and it was abysmal. Like I said, I was expecting it to be boring, but it was actually much worse than that. So first, let's listen to Mike Pence's opening statement here, because it angered me.
First off, thank you, Elaine. Thank you to Norwood University for their wonderful hospitality and Commission on Presidential Debates. It's deeply humbling for me to be here. Be surrounded by my wonderful family and Senator Kaine. It's an honor to be here with you as well. And I also want to say thanks to everyone that's looking in tonight, who understands what an enormously important time this is in the life of our nation. For the last 7.5 years, we've seen America's place in the world, and we've seen an economy stifled by more taxes, more regulation, a war on coal, and a failing health care reform come to be known as Obamacare, and the American people know that we need to make a change. And so I want to thank all of you for being with us tonight. I also want to thank Donald Trump for making that call and inviting us to be a part of this ticket. I have to tell you, I'm a small town boy from a place not too different from Farmville. I grew up with a cornfield in my backyard. My grandfather had immigrated to this country when he was about my son's age. My mom and dad built everything that matters in a small town in southern Indiana. They built a family and a good name and a business, and they raised a family.
Okay. God damn it, I hate Mike Pence. Stop. Let me tell you guys something. I was a small-town boy. I had a cornfield in my backyard. I had to beat off to a thought of my teacher because I couldn't find a Playboy magazine because even that was out of reach for me, never mind the internet. That wasn't a thing when I was growing up. Like, dude, stop. Stop with your folksy, I'm one of you. I'm one of the regular folks. Let me tell you, I did some farming, so I'm qualified to be the vice president. What the fuck? Fuck! Stop it! Okay, this breed of politician has to go away. Now, look, for Trump's situation, it's almost unique because he's so not that maybe the idea was to counterbalance the ticket with a little bit of that, sprinkle in the classic politician. But look, let me tell you something, man. Millennials are not interested in that shit. The future is not interested in that shit. Take your goofy-ass stories about growing up on a farm and having a cornfield and, mama cooking porridge in the morning while Skippy the dog waits for a belly rub. Shut the fuck up! That's got nothing to do with anything. So enough with that. Let's be real. Let's be serious. Let's be adults. Let's talk about policy. And to the extent he did talk about policy, of course, it was a fucking dumpster fire.
Under this economy, President Obama, more taxes, more regulation, a war on coal.
Okay. He mentioned the war on coal at least four times during the night. You would think he would reel in the pandering when it's going to get you a net total of 16 votes. But no, he's
war on coal, war on coal, war on coal, war on coal.
Hey, dipshit, that's going away like the horse and buggy went away. Okay, that's these kinds of energy sources, whether it be coal or, you know, natural gas, or whether it's the big oil companies who control our politicians, we have to transition away from that as a result of climate change. I mean, again, you could argue as fervently as you want that the Morse code machine needs to come back, but at a certain point, you look ridiculous. So I get it. You're the party more of that ideology and that philosophy of let's hold on to the good old times, but you got to pump your brakes because you go too far and you make it too obvious. Oh, more taxes, President Obama, more taxes. Okay, are you going to bring up the fact that he cut small business taxes over a dozen times in his first term alone? No. Are you going to bring up the fact that, in fact, the only people the Obama administration raised taxes for was who? People making north of $400,000 a year. You got nothing to say about that. Are you going to bring up the fact that the regulation you're referring to that Obama implemented is actually Dodd-Frank? Now, Dodd-Frank has a million and one problems. But guess what? The biggest issue with it was it didn't go far enough. Not that we shouldn't have done it. So everything is just misleading and off. And as a final point here, because this, again, this shows you the fakeness of the kind of guy he is. Instead of, like, skipping over the part where he mentions the university, he said, oh, I want to thank everybody here from Norwood University. That's not a university. You made that up. That doesn't exist. You're at Longwood University. He just said Norwood. He's like, fuck it. Yeah, I don't know the name. I'll just go with Norwood. YOLO, bitch. I'm happy to be here at Norwood University. This isn't Norwood! Don't give a shit! Anyway, as I was saying, what are you talking about, Norwood University? That's not a thing. He made it up. He forgot the name, made it up mid-speech, because, you know, he needs to come across as the folksy guy who knows what you're who knows what you feel, and let me tell you something about the cornfield in my backyard when I was a kid. Dude, you know how somebody keeps it real in that situation? You just don't mention the university. I'm happy to be here in name the state. Nope, couldn't do it, couldn't do it. And that also goes to show you, because I watched it, I had no clue live that wasn't the university they were at. I had no clue. It was later on when the fact checkers were like, what the fuck, that I learned about it. But that goes to show you how smooth of a liar Mike Pence actually is. First hand, baby. Okay. All right, let me take the first break. When we come back, Tim Kaine was having some difficulty answering for Hillary Clinton's corruption, and Mike Pence apparently is pretty concerned about bigotry, believe it or not. What? But you got to see what kind of bigotry. All right, stay right there, guys.
Change your crazy ways. You hear me? Say you're leaving on a
Son of a bitch. All right, guys. All right, Tim Kaine. We got, he struggles answering for Hillary's corruption here. Let's check it out. Tim Kaine was having some difficulty answering for Hillary Clinton's corruption at the debate, so he did the most legendary dodge of all time.
There's a reason why people question the trustworthiness of Hillary Clinton, and that's because they're paying attention. I mean, the reality is when she's Secretary of State, Senator, come on. She had a Clinton Foundation accepting contributions from foreign governments.
You are Donald Trump's apprentice. Let me talk about this.
Senator, I think I'm still on my time.
Well, I think, isn't this a discussion?
This is our open discussion.
Senator, let's talk about this.
Well,
let me interrupt you
and finish my sentence if I can. The Clinton Foundation accepted foreign contributions from foreign governments and foreign donors while she was Secretary of State.
Okay, now I can weigh in.
She had a private server.
I get to weigh in. Let me just say
that.
I did weigh in. Senator,
that pay-to-play process.
You have an opportunity.
Governor Pence doesn't think the world in sequality, you know, is going to say it's everybody's fault.
Do you?
Let me tell you this. When Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, Governor Pence, do you know that Osama bin Laden was alive?
What? What the fuck was that? He's like, okay, so very important issue of the Clinton Foundation and corruption and pay-to-play. You know, there's instances of, as the Associated Press reported, over half of the meetings that she had with private citizens as Secretary of State was with Clinton Foundation donors. You know, International Business Times has reported that you had governments donating to the Clinton Foundation by paying Bill Clinton for speeches, and then lo and behold, they got favors from the State Department, like Saudi Arabia and their weapons deal. So Pence is pointing all this stuff out. Hey, this is troubling. Hey, this is corruption. Hey, this is pay to play. Hey, this is legalized bribery. And what does Tim Kaine do? Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Well, did you know Osama bin Laden was alive, and then under Hillary Clinton, Osama bin Laden was killed? That might be the reddest red herring I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that thing is deep, deep red. That thing is fucking crimson, son. What the fuck, man? You know what that reminded me of? During the Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were going at it. And Bernie Sanders was hitting Hillary Clinton over accepting Wall Street donations. So what did Hillary Clinton said? Yes, Senator, I took the donations. And I took the donations because Wall Street is in New York City, which was affected by 9/11. She pulled a Lois Griffin from Family Guy. When in doubt, 9/11. Everybody's like, she wins. That doesn't work in real life, man. You can't do that. We're not that stupid. We're not that stupid. The issue was the Clinton Foundation. The issue is their corruption. Now, Tim Kaine does, to be fair to him, he does go on to make a decent point. He says, okay, well, look, the Clinton Foundation does good stuff. You didn't see this in the clip here, but he does go on to say it in the debate. They do good stuff. They help people with AIDS. They do this charity work and that charity work. And what did the Trump Foundation do? Oh, this guy's got a charity, and he took the money to buy a fucking portrait of himself, which is true. That's what he did. He used the money from his charity to pay some of his legal bills. So, yeah, he's a scumbag, and the Trump charity is an absolute fraud, too. But the broader point remains that doesn't deflect from the pay-to-play corruption that happened with Hillary Clinton and with the Clinton Foundation. And understand, the Clintons have collectively taken over $3 billion in their careers from special interests. That's not something you could just sweep under the rug. That's not something any liberal or progressive should be okay with. Obviously, they're going to do favors for the people who gave them that money. And they gave them money directly into their pockets for speeches that they did. They gave money to the Clinton Foundation. They gave money to the various super PACs, their various campaigns. The list goes on and on with how well-connected they are. So, no, Tim Kaine, that deflection is beyond ridiculous. Again, reel it in, son. And you got a good sense in that little back and forth there how Tim Kaine came across in the rest of the debate, too. Like I said, by some counts, over 70 interruptions. He just came across as annoying. Now, when you break it down and you take all of his statements versus all of Mike Pence's statements throughout the debate,
yeah, Tim Kaine said a lot more things that are just factually true. But that's not how people are going to walk away from it. They're going to walk away from it on how they feel and what, you know, the sense that the candidate gave them and who kept it together and who seemed, you know, who had the better visuals, if you will. You look at them and go, oh, this person is not as annoying. And I think on that front, Mike Pence won. So you could tell. I had to watch this thing twice, man. I had to watch it once and live tweet it and then watch it again and clip it out for you guys. And you could tell, oh, I was reeling last night. I had to go over shit like this again, and I wanted to bang my head against the wall. Okay. All right, now we go to a little back and forth on the issue of bigotry. And actually, this is mostly just Mike Pence here. But you're going to get a sense that he actually cares about generalizations and problems like that. Mike Pence is pretty concerned about bigotry. He expressed this in the debate last night. Let's see exactly who he thinks are the victims of bigotry.
But they also hear the bad-mouthing. The bad-mouthing that comes from people that seize upon tragedy in the wake of police action shootings as a reason to use a broad brush to accuse law enforcement of implicit bias or institutional racism. And that really has got to stop. We ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. We ought to assure the public that we'll have a full and complete and transparent investigation whenever there's a loss of life because of police action. But, Senator, please, you know, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making
Elaine,
the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Elaine.
That was great. So he said twice. Once he said, quote, broad brush, and then another time he used the word broad. He's like, look, man, come on, man. I don't want – why do you keep doing this? When there's an issue with a police officer, basically it's a bad apple. So don't paint with a broad brush against the police department. That's effectively bigotry. Like, why would you blame all cops for the action of some bad cops and then talk about inherent bias in the police departments and stuff like that? Now – that comment in isolation, is it a crazy thing to say? No, it's not, because we saw what happened in Dallas. It wasn't that long ago. In Dallas, you had police officers gunned down, innocent police officers who didn't do anything to anybody that we know of, and were innocent until proven guilty in this country. But they, by all accounts, totally lovely police officers. They were killed because of previous actions done by other cops elsewhere in the country. So there was a fucking bigot who thought all cops were bad, and he murdered some police officers. So that statement on its own is not a problem because it's actually true. I agree that while you do need to do systemic reform for police departments in various ways, community policing, you know, body cameras on the cops, and the drug war, so on and so forth, there's a point there. There's a point there. Don't blame all cops. Don't use a broad brush, so on and so forth. But the issue arises not because of that. The issue arises because of the hypocrisy. Because as you yearn for not using a broad brush and generalizations and a bigoted mindset towards cops, the guy you're defending, the other person on the ticket, the guy who you're the VP for, he said, let's ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S. He said, let's kick out all undocumented immigrants, 11 million people. He started the campaign by saying, the Mexicans, they're coming into the country, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. So meaning most are not good people, they're criminals, they're rapists, according to Donald Trump. And this is the guy who just called in the last debate for nationwide stop and frisk. Stop and frisk is unconstitutional, it doesn't work, and it's been proven that it disproportionately targets minorities. Now, again, this is where people say, yeah, but you have to because they commit more crimes. 97% of stop and frisks don't have any positive outcome. In other words, 97% of stop and frisks get the wrong people, and the people haven't committed a crime. They're not carrying anything illegal. So you're violating the Fourth Amendment rights 97% of the time. People who didn't do anything to anybody, but you're stopping them and doing an invasive search, and now that person has no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. And we cover the numbers from New York City. There are more stops and frisks of black people than there are black people in the city. Think about that. So it really is just cracking down on one segment of the population, and it doesn't work. When the number of stop and frisks went down, crime also went down. Again, these are the stats that we've covered a million times on the show. So wait a second. If stop and frisk worked, well, that means the more stop and frisk you do, the more crime's going to go down. That didn't happen. That wasn't the case. That just didn't come to fruition. So it doesn't work. You're disproportionately targeting one group of people, and 97% of the time, you're just violating their constitutional rights. So he's totally fine, and this ticket is totally fine with being bigoted and using a broad brush against all Muslims, against all Hispanics, against all black people. But the one time they go, whoa, why are you being bigoted, is when it's against cops. No, please, be more nuanced and be more thoughtful about this. And don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. And your house, Mike Pence, and Donald Trump's house, is the glassiest of glass houses. All right, now we go to foreign policy issues. I'm going to have a lot to say on this one, man. Holy schmageggins. Mike Pence went after the Democrats on foreign policy at the VP debate last night. Let's check it out.
Because Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate a status of forces agreement that would have allowed some American combat troops to remain in Iraq and secure the hard-fought gains the American soldier had won by 2009. ISIS was able to be literally conjured up out of the desert, and it's overrun vast areas that the American soldier had won in Operation Iraqi Freedom. My heart breaks for the likes of Lance Corporal Scott Zabowski. He fell in Fallujah in 2005. He fought hard some of the most difficult days in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And he paid the ultimate sacrifice to defend our freedom and secure that nation. And that nation was secured in 2009. But because Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama failed to provide a status of forces agreement and leave sufficient troops in there, we are back at war. The president just ordered more troops on the ground. We are back at war in Iraq, and Scott Zabowski, whose mom would always come to Memorial Day events in Newcastle, Indiana, to see me, and I'd always give her a hug and tell her we're never going to forget our son, and we never will. Scott Zabowski and the sacrifices the American soldier made were squandered in Iraq because this administration created a vacuum in which ISIS was able to grow. And a reference to the Iranian deal that Hillary Clinton initiated, $150 billion
stopping
to the radical
weapons
mullahs
program
in
without
Iran.
Firing a shot.
You didn't stop the nuclear weapons program.
Yes, they did. Mike, that was the entire point of the nuclear deal. How do you not know this, you jackass? But I think you do know it, and you're just lying, because you're a smooth liar, Mr. Norwood University, even though that's not a thing. So, Iran got back their own money that we froze, that we kidnapped. The deal was, hey, if you let the IAEA in there to check your nuclear program, and your nuclear program is limited to civilian purposes, like research and power for the power grid for your country, well, yeah, then you get back your own money. So a promise to not have nuclear weapons and to prove that, and then you get back your own money. The most reasonable deal ever, and you have Reuters reporting just 3 days ago, we covered it on the show, that Iran is abiding by the nuclear deal. So you should be thanking Obama, because if you actually care about Iran not getting a nuke, mission accomplished. This is the best case scenario. But no, Mike Pence can't say that. Donald Trump can't say that. The Republicans more broadly can't say that. They're just like, I don't know, I'm bad, or you should have done intervention or something, or Iran's going to get a nuke. They just lie about it.
Iran's on the path to get a nuke, but they're not. In fact, it's the exact opposite. But I'm just going to say they're on the path to get a nuke. Okay, then you're a fucking moron. You're a moron. So that's just not true. Flat-out fear-mongering about the situation in Iran. But now let's go to the Iraq point for a second. Okay, you got to get your fucking story straight, son. So half the time, Donald Trump is on the campaign trail saying, we shouldn't have gone into Iraq. We shouldn't have gone in. Tremendous, believe me. Let me just tell you. Okay, and I've given him credit when he says that. You want to know why? Because it's true. Now, he didn't oppose it from the beginning. There's audio of him on Howard Stern saying he was in favor of going in, yada, yada. We know that. So he's a liar, he's a hypocrite, so on and so forth. But when he uses the rhetoric and when he keeps arguing we shouldn't have gone in, I say, you know what? Credit where credit is due. He's right about that. We shouldn't have gone in. So Mike Pence, his argument is the exact opposite. He just did it right there. We shouldn't have left. We shouldn't have left. Pulling out led to ISIS. That's the argument he's making. We should have left troops there. If we left troops there, there wouldn't be ISIS. And then did you hear the line of argument he used? He mentions a soldier who died in Iraq in 2005, and he's blaming the Democrats. Hey, jackass, you built that. That's the Republican war. You voted for it. Well, to be fair, Hillary Clinton voted for it too. But George W. Bush's war, mostly the Republicans' war in Iraq, that was before Obama even got in there. So you're, oh my God, I can't believe this soldier died in 2005. Yeah, I can't either. You should have never gone into Iraq in 2003, so the soldier died in 2005. They love doing revisionist history, but only to a point. Okay, let's do revisionist history, but let's stop at Obama coming into office and be mad that he took the troops out and say that led to ISIS, as opposed to the original problem, the original sin of going into Iraq in the first place, which made your bed and eventually you were going to sleep in it because it was going to go to shit and ISIS was going to come out of that. So they're never willing to be fully objective and fully honest and go further back and say the problem was going into Iraq. Or sometimes Trump says that, but then his VP undercuts him and says shit like this. And also Trump undercuts himself because he's done the same thing. He's flip-flopped on Iraq so many times where he's argued at times, nope, we should have stayed longer. And by the way, think about the implication of what they're arguing too. That's an open-ended occupation. So that's your solution? This is what you want to sell to the American people? Be my guest. Be my guest. Proceed, sir. That's your argument? Well, we shouldn't have left, and that's what led to ISIS.
Okay, so when do you want to leave? Well, you could join Lindsey Graham's team and say, we don't leave. That's what Lindsey Graham believes, quite literally. He said it in an interview. No, we don't leave. I don't know what you mean. Oh, okay. Okay, so you invade a country that did not attack us on false pretenses, and then you just permanently occupy it. Whatevs, that's the solution. That ain't solution, bitch. That's imperialism. That's violating international law. That's committing war crimes and doubling down on it. But there's no introspection. There's no moral analysis. That's, you know, way above this guy's fucking pay grade and IQ level. Give me a break, man. These guys are a joke. You can't argue pulling out led to Iraq and we should have stayed there, because then there's no end in sight. If you pull out now, if you pulled out in 10 years, if you pulled out in 27 fucking years, you already broke Iraq, and there's already going to be a monstrous group that's going to rise out of the ashes, which is why the answer is you should have never fucking gone in the first place. Not, grandfather that decision, but now get mad at Obama. No. Absolutely ridiculous. And they got to get their story straight, and they got to decide whether or not they want to attack Hillary Clinton and the Democrats from a left-wing position, namely, we should have never gone into Iraq, and that's what I'm going to argue from the beginning, and I'm not going to deviate from that, or if they're going to argue we should have never left Iraq. Can't have it both ways. Fucking pick one, you idiots. Okay. Let me do a serious story, and then we'll take our final break, and I'll come back with still some great stuff for you. Trump's VP, Mike Pence, laid out a Syria policy last night, and there's a lot to say about it.
The United States of America needs to begin to exercise strong leadership to protect the vulnerable citizens and over 100,000 children in Aleppo. Hillary Clinton's top priority when she became Secretary of State was the Russian reset. The Russian reset. After Russian reset, the Russians invaded Ukraine and took over Crimea. And the small and bullying leader of Russia is now dictating terms to the United States to the point where all the United States of America, the greatest nation on earth, just withdraws from talks about a ceasefire while Vladimir Putin puts a missile defense system in Syria while he marshals the forces and begins. Look, we have got to begin to lean into this with strong, broad-shouldered American leadership. It begins by rebuilding our military. And the Russians and the Chinese have been making enormous investments in the military. We have the smallest Navy since 1916. We have the lowest number of troops since the end of the Second World War. We've got to work with the Congress and Donald Trump will to rebuild our military and project American strength in the world. But about Aleppo and about Syria, I truly do believe that what America ought to do right now is to immediately establish safe zones so that families and vulnerable families with children can move out of those areas, work with our Arab partners real time right now to make that happen. And secondly, I just have to tell you that the provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength. And if Russia chooses to be involved and continue, I should say, to be involved in this barbaric attack on civilians in Aleppo, the United States of America should be prepared to use military force to strike military targets of the Assad regime to prevent them from this humanitarian crisis that is taking place in Aleppo.
That was insane. What he's talking about, and he might not even realize it because he's dense, is potentially escalating to World War III with Russia over Aleppo in Syria. Let me ask you a question. Is that something you're comfortable sending your kids to? You know, I mean, you got a beautiful daughter in Kentucky or a son in Wyoming. And, okay, all right, son, let's get your life together. Go fight and possibly die in Syria. Because we're mad at Vladimir Putin and we will escalate to World War III with them. Is that something you're willing to risk a world war over? No, they are falling into the same Cold War trap that used to be the case during the Cold War. Constant, endless escalation with Russia. Puffing out your chest. He said it, and he's arguing like it's a good thing. Strength, American strength is the answer. What does that mean? Are we fucking Neanderthals? Are we barbarians? We can't sit down and have a conversation and negotiate and talk and make some sort of a deal? I thought you guys, I make deals. Tremendous. Believe me. I thought that was his thing. But no, with Russia, American strength in the world. And by the way, this does understand he did just undercut Donald Trump's philosophy to a certain extent because half the time Donald Trump's out there saying the opposite of this. And he's like, no, I want Russia to take out ISIS and to, you know, I want to be friends with them and I want to have better relations and stuff like that. Pence is like, put all that aside. I'm going to argue this. I'm going to argue the standard Republican line. And honestly, that's a hell of a lot scarier and a lot worse than what Donald Trump says. So you have no clue what their administration would actually do. But if it is what Mike Pence is saying, oh, my God, buckle up. So when he calls for safe zones, and at another time he calls for a no-fly zone, and by the way, Tim Kaine and Hillary Clinton largely agree with this, which is fucking scary, because that means no matter what, we're going to get shitty policy in Syria. But when they call for a no-fly zone and a safe zone, guys, understand, that means we're going to war and sending ground troops, because in order to set those things up, that requires tens of thousands of ground troops. So it's an artful way to work around the tough political reality. Like the Republicans would just say oftentimes, let's ground invade. And people go, whoa, what are you talking about? That's crazy. The Democrats are slicker than that. They go, oh, we're going to do a no-fly zone and a safe zone. You're against a safe zone? I guess you want children in Aleppo to be murdered. This is what they say. And then what do they do? Oh, what do you mean? We're just setting up a fly, no-fly zone in a safe zone. So anyway, send in tens of thousands of troops. Go ahead. Go ahead. That's what the end result is. And by the way, you know what comes with a no-fly zone in a safe zone, right? Anybody who violates the airspace, shoot them down. This is what I mean when I say they might be escalating to World War III with Russia. So a Russian plane flies into your safe zone, your no-fly zone, and you shoot them down. Boom, we're at World War III with Russia. Again, you want to risk this over Syria? It's unbelievable. The hawkish mindset of both campaigns is just the worst thing imaginable for the American people. And he also, he does a classic, you know, neoconservative imperialist thing here where he's like, oh my God, I'm so concerned about the children in Aleppo. You're concerned about the children in Aleppo, Mike Pence? Are you concerned about the children in Saudi Arabia, our top ally? How about the women who can't fucking drive? They're not allowed to. They're second-class citizens. How about all the people in Saudi Arabia who've been beheaded in the public square for drug smuggling and sorcery and witchcraft? How about the fact that they declare all atheists are terrorists? How about, I don't know if you want to be consistent here, you're so concerned about the children in Aleppo, not that that's a vital region in the world geopolitically and you want more power and control of that region, which is why you're focusing on them and not other innocent people who are being hurt, but I'd love to hear your fucking bleeding heart for, I don't know, the children who are being killed in South Sudan, you know, as our government arms child soldiers there and stands idly by as they massacre each other. Where's your concern for those kids? How about the kids in the Congo who are involved in conflict? How about the Rohingya in Myanmar who, according to Amnesty International and many human rights organizations, are undergoing a slow ethnic cleansing and genocide right now? How about for our ally, fucking Duterte in the Philippines, who's saying, I would love to be like Hitler and slaughter 3 million drug users and people involved in the drug trade? No concern for those people, but oh my God, the children in Aleppo. Now, what am I pointing out here? I'm pointing out that there is massive, utter hypocrisy in their humanitarian concerns. It's never about people who are our allies who are doing horrible things or people who are just off the grid and in a non-vital region in the world. Fuck them. I don't care about those kids. I care about the kids in Aleppo. That's who I care about. And yeah, sure, toppling the Assad regime might just make it so that we have more geopolitical strength in this chessboard against Iran and Russia, who happen to be aligned with Syria. But I'm not looking at this like a chessboard, and I care about more power and more control and business as usual, money. No, it's not about that at all. No, that's exactly what it's about, man. That's exactly what it's about. So spare me this nonsense. We have two candidates that are just a disaster on Syria. Look, don't get me wrong, man. Don't misinterpret me. Don't fucking strawman me. Bottom line is on this, the U.S. is already intervening to a certain extent in Syria. I'm even against that. If you want to, you know, give humanitarian aid, I'm all for it. If you want the U.N. to be involved in some respects and to do basic protection of vital regions, I'm for it. But understand, there's a raging civil war going on over there. Okay, there's atrocities and horrible human rights abuses happening on both sides. For the U.S. to get involved, it's a quagmire that's akin to Iraq. Remember when it was the Sunni versus Shia civil war in Iraq? And what did every liberal in the country say? Come on, man, we got to get out. What are we doing? That's a quagmire. We're in the middle of a civil war. That's not going to make anything better. Same fucking thing with Syria. Same thing with Syria. That's not going to make it better. We're not going to fucking stop anything. We're making everything worse. We're giving the arms to everybody involved in the fight. We have CIA armed rebels fighting Pentagon armed rebels in Syria. Okay, that's U.S. intervention. That has made it worse. The other day we bombed the Syrian army. The Syrian army who was in the middle of fighting ISIS. And this guy's answer and Hillary Clinton's answer is, how about more U.S. intervention? That'll help. It's doing the opposite right now. And then you want to add the angle on top of it that it might lead to World War III with Syria. I can't deal with how bad these guys are on these issues, man. It really, I mean, I think about the future and I shudder. I shudder. All of these idiots know less about Syria and less about the world and foreign policy than I do. And I'm an asshole YouTube host. He also doesn't understand. Let me just say this final thing here real quick. He doesn't understand the nature of the rebels at this point. Assad is not good. Assad has done atrocities. The Syrian army have done atrocities. Terrible. Agreed. The rebels are mostly jihadists and Islamists right now. What happened? What was the lesson of fucking Iraq and Syria? Don't topple the authoritarian strongman in the Middle East, because it'll lead to worse consequences. ISIS, namely. So everybody in the country, every fucking intelligent person in the country looks at Iraq and looks at Libya and says, yeah, the problem you shouldn't have toppled. As horrific as they were, I grant you all of it. Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein. We shouldn't have toppled them. We shouldn't have fucking toppled them. Just shouldn't have toppled them. People can't wait to make the same mistake in Syria. Mike Pence, even Hillary Clinton, you know, she's been on the record on this a million times over. Assad, I mean, fucking Assad's got to go, and then what'll happen? All the people calling to topple the Syrian government, topple Assad today, if/when that happens, they'll then turn around when it goes to shit and the situation is even worse off than it was before, and they'll say, fucking U.S. intervention, why did we topple Assad? Well, that's, I'm saying that right now. Don't do it. Don't do it. Mike Pence wants to do it. Tim Kaine and Hillary Clinton want to do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Okay. I got to take a break, man. When we come back, I got four final stories for you. Hopefully we'll squeeze them all in. Mike Pence caught speeding on the issue of abortion, and Tim Kaine speaks about the death penalty. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. son of a bitch. We're back, everybody. I still got a few to get to here. So, I'm gonna do it. All right. Abortion. Mike Pence was caught speeding last night defending Donald Trump on the issue of abortion. Let's listen.
The very last thing the government should do is have laws that would punish women who make reproductive choices. And that is the fundamental difference between a Clinton-Kane ticket and a Trump-Pence ticket that wants to punish women who make that choice.
It's really not. Donald Trump and I would never support legislation that punished women who made the heartbreaking choice to end a pregnancy.
And what do you believe in punishment for abortion, yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Oops. Understand, guys, that happened all night. In fact, just hours after the debate, Hillary Clinton's team released an ad here where you have Mike Pence saying what he thinks Donald Trump did and didn't say, followed by what Donald Trump actually said, and it's fairly disastrous.
With not praising Vladimir Putin as a great leader. Donald Trump and Mike Pence have said he's a great leader. And Donald Trump
Putin's been a very strong leader for Russia.
Vladimir Putin has been a stronger leader in his country than Barack Obama has been in this country.
Donald Trump, on the other hand, didn't know that Russia had invaded the Crimea.
Well, that's he's not going to go into Ukraine. Right? You can mark it down, you can put it down, you can take it anywhere.
Well, he's already there, isn't he? Donald Trump has said it. Deportation force. They want to go house to house, school to school, business to business, and kick out 16 million people. And I cannot believe
you're going to have a deportation force.
Donald Trump and I would never support legislation that punished women.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
There has to be some form of punishment.
More nations should get nuclear weapons.
Don't
try to defend that.
Well, he never said that. Wouldn't you rather, in a certain sense, have Japan have nuclear weapons?
Saudi Arabia
have nuclear weapons? Saudi Arabia, absolutely.
Donald Trump said keep them out if they're Muslim. Mike Pence put a program in place to keep
total and complete shutdown of Muslims.
He is asking everybody to vote for somebody that he cannot defend.
It says, it's okay, Mike. We'd have a hard time defending him, too. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say the best Hillary Clinton ad so far. Because he used their own words. And virtually everything that Mike Pence said, Donald Trump didn't say that. No, he said it. In fact, that was one of my most retweeted tweets last night during the debate, was when I said something along the lines of, Mike Pence is going to be pretty upset when he realizes Donald Trump indeed said all the things he says he didn't, or something like that. That was a little bit word salad-y, but anyway, I think you get the point. This is an instance where it shouldn't be on the Clinton campaign to release this. This should just be media fact check 101, bitch. The second that you got back from the debate, the second the debate was over and CNN and MSNBC and the other stations cut to their shows and their debate breakdown, it shouldn't have been the useless speculation that everybody does. It should have been, boom, here, he said he didn't say this. Okay, he did say that. Run the clip. He said he didn't say that. He did say that. Run the clip. And you should just go through it. And again, so this is the thing that's a little bit frustrating in this particular debate is that I've never seen a clear example of one person, Tim Kaine, actually being right on the substance repeatedly. He kept saying things that were true. He kept saying things. He kept attacking them correctly. But when you put aside the substance, and again, most Americans don't necessarily – they're not political junkies, so they're not into all the nuance and the details of this, so they don't know necessarily that he's right about all of it. Well, you had Mike Pence, whose style was superior – and he came across as less of a douche. So that's why you look at the polls afterwards and people say, yeah, Mike Pence won. Tim Kaine kind of rubbed me the wrong way. He was annoying. Well, again, clearest difference I've ever seen, biggest difference I've ever seen between somebody right on the substance, wrong on the style, and might lose the debate, even though if you grade it, you know, maybe 76% of the shit Kane said was correct, and only 30% of the shit Pence said was correct. So it's a little bit frustrating, but it is what it is. And look, I've witnessed it myself. That's why I said, in the eyes of the average American, Mike Pence won the debate. He just won the debate. So, shocker, as somebody said on Twitter last night, shocker, I can't believe Hillary Clinton picked an unlikable VP. Exactly, that's the most predictable thing ever. It's Hillary Clinton we're talking about. They couldn't run a worse campaign and fuck this up any more than they've had, and they're still holding on to a lead. So they better thank their lucky stars, because more bad decisions from the Hillary Clinton campaign, and it could easily be a Donald Trump presidency. She should be, you know, 20 points up on the guy. But she's not, because she picks people like Tim Kaine, a centrist Democrat who supported TPP. He's got all these fucking issues with him. He's annoying, so on and so forth. And this ad is a rare instance where they're right, and they fact-checked correctly, and we should see if the media picks it up and runs with it, because Mike Pence is a superb liar, and that came across during the debate. Okay. Okay, now, do I want to hold off on the Pence death penalty one? I don't know. You know what, let me do it. It's a little bit of a nuanced one. I'm not in the mood for nuance. But actually, the next story is nuanced too, so what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm damned to nuance, bitch. Tim Kaine spoke about the death penalty at the debate last night and how his faith factors into his philosophy.
For me, the hardest struggle in my faith life was the Catholic Church is against the death penalty, and so am I. But I was governor of a state, and the state law said that there was a death penalty for crimes if the jury determined them to be heinous. And so I had to grapple with that. When I was running for governor, I was attacked pretty strongly because of my position on the death penalty, but put the voters of Virginia in the eye and said, look, this is my religion. I'm not going to change my religious practice to get one vote, but I know how to take an oath and uphold the law, and if you elect me, I will uphold the law. And I was elected, and I did. It was very, very difficult to allow executions to go forward, but in circumstances where I didn't feel like there was a case for clemency, I told Virginia voters I would uphold the law, and I did. That was a real struggle. But I think it is really, really important that those of us who have deep faith lives don't feel like we can just substitute our own views for everybody else in society, regardless of their views.
So this is an interesting part of the debate here, because what he's doing is he's actually presenting an argument for basic secularism. You know, the idea that the government should not represent religion, should not pick any religious ideology over another religious ideology, and shouldn't even really be in the business of religion or the game of religion at all. How we make legal decisions and decisions that affect all of us based on democracy and based on reason and based on logic, and I can't allow my interpretation of my faith to cloud my judgment and to impose that basically on everybody else. So on the one hand, that's just a great argument for secularism, and I applaud him for understanding the basics of secularism. I mean, that is secularism. What he's doing there is the most constitutional thing imaginable in that respect. So that's one part of me on this. The other part of me thinks, okay, but dude, so there are other arguments against the death penalty, that it's not like your only argument or the only argument is, well, my faith tells me I should be against it, so therefore I'm not going to do it, because, again, that would be unconstitutional grounds to not do the death penalty. But we have the Eighth Amendment in this country. The Eighth Amendment protects from cruel and unusual punishment. 4% of people on death row, according to a recent study, didn't do it. They're not guilty. They're innocent. So 4% of the time, you're telling me, we've potentially killed the wrong people with the death penalty? By the way, cruel and unusual. Is it cruel to kill somebody? Is it unusual? Well, a majority of countries on the planet have abolished the death penalty. So to me, the argument is, if you're a governor, if you're an elected official, you should oppose the death penalty because from a plain-faced reading of the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, I'd argue it's unconstitutional. So you should oppose it on those grounds and not carry through with it. But what he's saying is, I'm personally opposed to it, but I'm opposed to it because of my faith. So as the governor, I upheld the law and went through with it. But again, if you just, you know, you're upholding the secularism part of the Constitution, but you're disregarding the Eighth Amendment part of the Constitution, which is protection from cruel and unusual punishment, and I'd argue that is cruel and unusual punishment, so you could have not done the executions based on that. So I don't know. I found it a little weird that he's arguing – it's like he tried to use a touching personal story about faith to argue in favor of the death penalty. It struck me as like a little bit tone deaf and weird and slightly barbaric because, you can imagine 50 years in the future, 60 years in the future, hopefully when the death penalty is abolished, long abolished, people look back and they go, shit, that was an answer he gave? Because it's like, look, let me tell you how moral I am. I am so moral and I'm such a deep faith person that even though I'm against killing people, I kill people. Like, what is that? So it's weird. I've never seen a more mixed answer in my life where I have like two really rigidly different takes on it. One of them being good because he's voicing basically support and respect for secularism. Bad because he's not noticing obvious constitutional issues that the death penalty has. And he was apparently okay when it came down to it with carrying out these executions. So this is... this was a curious one. I'm interested to see what everybody else thinks about this one. Okay. All right. Let me go to – we're off the debate. We're done. Jay, you can exhale now. It's over. The pain is over. The VP debate is over. We're going to – pivot to Bill Clinton here, and then I'll give you Gary Johnson to end it up. And maybe we'll end early. We'll see, man. I mean, I feel like every time I say that, we don't end early, so I feel stupid for saying it. But we might actually end early this time, so I don't know. We'll see. All right, Bill Clinton and how he may have shoved his foot in his mouth. Bill Clinton was at a rally for Hillary Clinton this week, and he made some comments on Obamacare that are ruffling some liberal feathers. He said, "The people who are getting killed in this deal are small business people and individuals who make just a little bit too much to get any of these subsidies. You've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, winding up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world." So that's a pretty, you know, robust argument against this individual mandate system that is Obamacare. And many people on the left and many people in the media have pointed out, whoa, dude, don't you think you're undercutting Hillary Clinton? Don't you think you're undercutting the Obama administration? Don't you think you're undercutting the Democrats by making this argument and doing it on the campaign trail? So everybody's like, gaff, 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 gaff. Now, reading the headlines, I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, fuck, what did you do now, Bill? But when you read what he said, and then also when you read the further context, The Hill makes clear on this. He made these comments in the context of saying we should do basically a Medicare or Medicaid buy-in program, a public option. So, hey, here are the problems with Obamacare. Let's go further and do the public option. No, no, no. In context, he's 100% correct. He is. If he had made this argument with the stated purpose of saying, let's scrap Obamacare, repeal it, and do nothing, and go right back to the monumentally fucked up system we had before, which was even worse than Obamacare, then I'd be out here saying, Bill Clinton is an idiot, and I hate him, and he's dead wrong. But given the context of it, and how he was arguing for a public option, no, he's actually 100% right, and this criticism isn't even wrong. It actually is true that there's a gap there, There's a gap between the people who can get into the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, which, by the way, is fantastic, but some states haven't adopted it, and that's the Republican governor's fault, and we can get into that. But there's a gap between that and the people who can go on the exchanges and potentially get subsidies to help pay for their health care. So there are plenty of people who fall between the Medicaid gap and the gap to get onto the exchanges, and then there are many people who make just a little bit too much to get the subsidies, and they are net paying more, and they are getting less coverage. So his critique is actually 100% correct, and I can't believe I'm out here defending Bill Clinton about anything, given my recent dislike for Bill Clinton on issues of free trade and regulation and stuff like that. I mean, he is a corporatist through and through. Don't get me wrong. He signed NAFTA. Disaster. But on this point, he's right. And he's even making the point to argue further, public option is the way to go. The only really upsetting thing about it is, dude, the Democrats could have and should have done it back when they got Obamacare. They had a supermajority. They could have gotten anything they wanted. Now, the Blue Dog Democrats were in the way, but I've described to you guys how you deal with them before, but it just wasn't in Obama to deal with them the way he should have. So the Blue Dogs were like, oh, I might lose election. I'm going to be against health care reform because I got to side with the Republicans. That was their reasoning. They're Democrats from mostly red states. That's what the Blue Dogs are. If I'm Obama, I call them into my office and I say, look, if you don't vote for this, your career is over. So what do? Well, at the time, Obama was popular, so you go campaign. You primary their ass and campaign for whoever, you know, is going against them. So we'll pump money into the person who's going to primary you. And guess what? Let's say you win the primary. We'll go campaign for the Republican. We'll secretly pump money to the Republican so that you lose. So then what would the person do? They'd be like, okay, no, I got it. I'm going to vote for it. So you had the votes, and it's not just me saying it. There were other Democratic politicians at the time involved in the debate, and they're like, dude, if we wanted, we could have done single payer. We had the votes. But they didn't get single payer. They didn't even get the public option. They got the individual mandate system. And all the compromising and caving from the Obama administration, how many Republican votes were earned? So the issue is you should have done it back then, like all the progressives were telling you. But you didn't, and now Obamacare is collapsing under its own weight. And you're like, oh, not now. Now we do the public option. Nope. Now the door is shut on it. And it would be a monumental effort that'll take years now to get it done, which you should do either way. But it'll take so long. In the meantime, the Republicans can demagogue about how bad Obamacare currently is. You made your own bed, now you got to sleep in it. All right, final story of the day, Gary Johnson. Let's do it. Gary Johnson snapped in an interview on MSNBC when he was asked about his various gaffes, and he went off on the issue of foreign policy.
At the same token, you're running to be commander-in-chief, foreign policy, and unexpected
and here's
the portfolio.
Yeah, and you know what? And the fact that somebody can dot the I's and cross the T's on a foreign leader or a geographic location then allows them to put our military in harm's way. You were talking about PTSD earlier. We put our military in this horrible situation where we go in and support regime change. They get involved in civil wars where hundreds of thousands of innocent people are in a crossfire. We're literally shooting at ourselves because we support both sides of conflict, Syria as an example, and we wonder why our men and service women suffer from PTSD in the first place. It's because we elect people who can dot the I's and cross the T's on these names and geographic locations, as opposed to the underlying philosophy, which is let's stop getting involved in these regime changes.
So the headlines on this, it was all over Twitter, it was all online. The headlines, you know, basically said, Gary Johnson is mad at presidents who know geography. And they're trying to say, oh, gaffe, 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 oh, another gaffe. So the previous gaffes he had, one of them was when they brought up Aleppo to him, and he's like, what's Aleppo? Okay, that one, come on, Gary, you're running for president. You got to know what Aleppo is, especially since it's in the news all the time now because of what's happening there in Syria. So he didn't know that. That was fairly inexcusable. He did the weird tongue thing when he's talking with MSNBC. I think it was MSNBC. Maybe it wasn't. Reporter, and he's like, you know, they're going to stifle my speech by not letting me on stage at these debates. The fuck was that? He thought it was, like, cute. Nobody knew what he was doing or saying. So that was weird. And then, of course, he couldn't name his favorite foreign leader, and Chris Matthews even moved the goalpost for him, and he's like, just name a leader. And he's like, Mexico, something. So that was all fairly inexcusable. No, this one, I don't agree with everybody who's feigning outrage over this. Because what he's saying, first of all, I don't think he's being literal. So I don't think he actually believes, like, you shouldn't know anything about geography because then that has better outcomes. He's using that, like, pithy approach to it and spin on it to make a broader point of, you guys are mad at me for not fucking knowing random places on a map, but I'm not going to send our troops to die. So my philosophy is correct. Regardless of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, I'm not going to do regime change, which means I'm not going to have more U.S. soldiers dying, which means I'm not going to destabilize the world more, which means I'm also going to save money because I'm not going to blow it on the military-industrial complex, spending over 50% of our discretionary budget on the military when we don't even have clean water in Flint. The point he's making. I've been noticing it a lot recently, and everybody's going to say, welcome to the internet, Kyle, you haven't realized this before. But, like, there are a lot of, like, hacky headlines that when you read the story, you're like, that's not really fair or accurate here. And I get the sense of that with Gary Johnson. Again, I think the other gaffes were legitimate gaffes and rather stupid, and I went after him for those. This one, no, because I don't think he's being literal. I don't think he actually means, like, if he were president and somebody comes in and they start talking about these different places, he's like, oh, I don't know where that is. No, he would learn it and he would know it. And then he'd, you know, say, yeah, and let's not invade. So I don't think he means it literally. I think he's using it as a pithy bridge to get to a broader point about, you know, you guys are so concerned about knowing all these different, textbook things, but you keep picking people who are wrong on the political philosophy where they're all interventionists. So that's what's more wrong than not knowing Aleppo or not knowing Uzbekistan, as who was it? Herman Cain famously didn't. So, and I don't think he's wrong on that. And I think people are being a little unfair with the Gary Johnson says it's better for presidents not to know geography. Okay. All right, out of time, guys. Much love. We will be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know the deal, son. All right, kisses. Enjoy the rest of your day. Peace.